ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
श्रीभगवानुवाच
योगस्त्रयो मया प्रोक्ता नीनं श्रेयो विदित्सया ज्ञानं कर्म च भक्तिश्च नोपायोऽन्यो अस्ति कुत्रचित्।
The
Supreme Personality of Godhead said,
Yoga
processes
Traya
three
Maya
by me
Prokta
described.
So
the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is replying to the question, not of Arjuna, but of Uddhava. And the question is, because at the end of the previous chapter, at the end of chapter 19, Krishna has said that one should transcend and not consider things in terms of piety and impiety, in terms of pap and punya. So, Krishna, or rather Uddhava, in the previous verse, yesterday's verse, he said, if the Vedic literature establishes the difference between pap and punya, piety and impiety, and the same literature in your words too nullifies distinction between piety and impiety, there will certainly be confusion. Certainly a valid question. And Krishna will now begin his answer. So he replies, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, because just imagine what it would be like in this world if one authority says, this is very, very good, say, everyone driving on the left-hand side of the road is good or bad? That's a difficult question. Driving on the left-hand side of the road in this society at this time and place is good or bad?
Good.
Very good. And another authority says, or the same authority says, and stealing is very
bad.
Very bad, especially if you get caught. And a long list of good and bad. This is good and this is bad. And then another authority, or the same authority at a different time, at a different place, says, it doesn't make a difference. There's no difference between which side of the road you drive on. And if it doesn't make a difference whether you steal or don't steal, because that way it doesn't make a difference if you get caught or not. So that would be extremely confusing, wouldn't it? Would you get confused? I'd also get confused. If there's no difference between driving on the left-hand side or the right side, it would, like, traffic in Mumbai, what would we do? It would be very difficult. So Krishna is going to begin his explanation of why he has spoken in that way. So first, yogas trayo maya prokta. Yogas traya, yogas means the processes, traya three, I have spoken, I have maya prokta. I've spoken about three processes. Nrinam, of human beings.
Shreya,
perfection.
Viditsaya.
So three processes by which human beings, Nrinam, Shreya, Viditsaya, they can achieve perfection, and Viditsaya means desiring to bestow upon them. Me desiring to bestow upon them perfection, I have given them three processes. Continuing.
Jnanam,
the path of philosophy.
Jnanam,
karma, cha bhaktischa. So, karma, the path of work. Cha,
also.
Bhakti, the path of devotion. Sha, also. So I've given these three different paths. The path of knowledge, the path of work, and also the path of bhakti. Desiring to bestow upon Nrinam, the human being's perfection. I've given these three paths.
No
paya.
Which
is a conjunction, a sandhi of na,
no,
upaya,
means,
anya,
other.
There are no other means. And then asti,
exists,
kutrachit,
whatsoever.
So other than these three paths, there are no other means to perfection exist, Krishna says. This is his words. Here's the translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "My dear Uddhav, because I desire that human beings may achieve perfection, I have presented three paths of advancement: the path of knowledge, the path of work, and the path of devotion. Beside these three, there is absolutely no other means of elevation." Please repeat. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said,
"My dear Uddhav,
because I desire that human beings
may achieve perfection,
I have presented three paths of advancement: the path of knowledge, the path of work, and the path of devotion.
Beside these three,
there is absolutely no other means of elevation." And here is the purport. Ultimately, the goal of philosophical speculation, jnana, pious regulated work, karma, and devotional service is the same. The goal of these three paths is the same. And that sameness is the goal, Krishna consciousness. As stated by the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita 4:11, Yeyetamam prapadyante tam tamstataiva bhajamyam. Mama Bhart Nanu Bhartante Manusha Bhartasa Vasa. All of them, as they surrender unto me, I reward accordingly. Everyone follows my path in all respects, O son of Prita. Although all authorized processes of human perfection ultimately lead to Krishna consciousness or love of God, various performers have specific propensities and qualifications and thus gravitate to different methods of self-realization. Lord Krishna here describes the three authorized processes together in order to emphasize that their ultimate goal is one. For instance, if we were going to say, you can take the bus, you can take the tram, or you can drive your car, or you can walk, you can get to the city. Describing them together indicates that the goal is the same, and there are different methodologies of achieving that goal, of attaining that goal. So, of course, there are differences of opinion in this world as what the goal of these processes are. But Krishna, he has already explained it in the Bhagavad Gita, and here he will explain it in the Uddhava Gita. Now, what causes someone to take one out of the paths? In other words, just like when we go to from here to the city, what causes one person to drive? All those who, when they go to the city, drive. Raise your hand. Oh, there's going to be a lot of undecided people, I can tell, who aren't going to reveal how they get to the city. All those who go to the city by tram from here, raise your hand. Ah. And all those who walk to the city, raise your hand. Not nobody. Ek admi. One person. And all those who take a bicycle, raise your hand. Okay, there's some bicyclers. Okay, now it's interesting if we were to analyze, there are different methods to get to the same goal, the same place getting to the city. Now, what are the causes of the different modes of transportation? There's the individuality of the individual. We are individuals, and because we're individuals, we have different needs. We have different, some people may need to save some money, so they walk, or some people may need to walk for their health, and some people may take a bicycle for the exercise, and some people may take a tram because they don't have a car and there's no parking in the city, and some people may take the car because it's a little quicker and they have parking spots available. And so according to the situation, the individuality and the needs and propensities, the individual characteristics of the person, one will choose one or another of the paths. But regardless of the path that is chosen, the goal is the same. Now, which is the quickest? Are you sure? Some days. Well, there's different opinions about that. So it's the same thing with karma jnana and yoga. I mean, obviously, if there's a huge traffic jam because of, why are there huge traffic jams? Rain because of? So many reasons. So then the taking the car won't be the fastest, and sometimes walking happens to be the fastest, depending upon what happens. Actually, one time I was listening to a lecture where Prabhupada said he was speaking about that of cars, automobiles, really great advancement. And then he began speaking about the traffic jams, and he obviously was in a traffic jam recently going from one place to another, where he said it took several hours to go 3 kilometers. And he said, what kind of advancement is this? There's cars, but the roads are so crowded. So what kind of actual advancement is this? But in any case, the goal is the same. So that is the point that's being made here. At this, Lord Krishna here describes the 3 authorized processes together in order to emphasize that their ultimate goal is one. At the same time, philosophical speculation and regulated pious work can never be considered equal to pure love of God, as the Lord has elaborately clarified in the previous chapters. The word traya, or 3, indicates that despite their ultimate oneness of purpose, the 3 paths display diversity, difference in progress and achievement. And here, our metaphor, our analogy can break down some. But the 3 paths, because the 3 paths are one in the sense that they have the same goal, it does not mean that they are one in all senses. Because it is clear that there is difference, there's diversity in progress and achievement. One will go faster on one level. If one is walking or taking a car, etc., one will go faster or slower. And also say if you're going to your office, you cannot drive your car into the office at some point unless you work in a parking lot. But at some point you're going to have to get out of the car and adopt the methodology of walking anyway. So one cannot achieve the same result by mere speculation or piety that one achieves by directly surrendering to the personality of Godhead, depending completely on His mercy and friendship. Which the commentators, Vedanta Maharaj and Gopi Pranadana Prabhu and Dravida Prabhu, mostly Vedanta Maharaj, but this is such a definition of bhakti, of the path of bhakti, what it means. And within this definition is the explanation of why one can't achieve the same results with karma and jnana. One is pious work, that's karma, mental speculation, that's jnana, in the sense that we use our intellectual abilities to discriminate between the self and matter, between that which is eternal, that which is us and that which is not us, and bhakti. And he's defining bhakti as direct surrendering to the personality of Godhead, completely depending on His mercy and friendship, His kind disposition towards us. So this is what bhakti, on the basic level, this is what it means. A surrender to Him. A dependence upon Him, knowing and being fully aware and confident of His friendship. Gotripte varanam tata. So when we surrender to Krishna, mamekam sharanam braja, as Krishna recommends in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, implicit in that surrender is that we have to be, we have to know that He's going to take care of us. And that He's mercifully disposed to those who give themselves towards Him, to Him. And His friendship, that He has not only merciful, but friendly, He has that type of a relationship with those who surrender to Him. So what have we heard so far? That there are different paths, but they're a differentiation. They have the same goal, and they're one in that sense, because the ultimate goal is the topmost goal, to become most intimately united with the Absolute Truth. That's Krishna, the Supreme Absolute Truth, Param Satyam. So the goal is the same, but one will achieve different aspects of the goal by the different paths, and one will progress at different speeds. The word karma here indicates works dedicated to the personality of Godhead, as described in the Bhagavad Gita. Yajna tat karmano nyatra lokayam karma bandhana taratam karma kaunteya mukta sangha samachara. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed, otherwise work binds one to the material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for His satisfaction, and in that way you will always remain unattached and free from bondage. So what's being spoken of by Krishna here is not just karma, but karma yoga, work done for the pleasure of Krishna. So that will bring one to the goal. If one is attached to the fruit of one's work, then one will become purified slowly or gradually, and then one will become detached from the fruit of one's work, and then one will continue to work, being attached to the work itself and not attached to the fruit, dutiful work, and then finally one will even give up the attachment to doing one's work because this is his duty, and simply do what one does, whatever Krishna wants, like Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna preached to him and spoke to him on different levels, but the ultimate level that Krishna spoke on is, you do what you do because I want you to do it. And if I wanted you to leave your work and go to the forest as you were proposing, I would tell you to do that. But I want you to work, I want you to fight this battle, not because it is your duty, not because you want the kingdom, but rather, on the other hand, simply because I want it. I have some work I want to do through you. Nimitta karan bhava savya sachin. I want you to be an instrument. So that level of my desire, I want you to be an instrument of my desire. So that is the same work being performed on the level of bhakti, when one willingly, happily, and with devotion accepts the fact that I am Krishna's servant and I want to please him, and I am not complete. I do not feel complete. I am not complete unless my consciousness is connected to Krishna, in the consciousness that I am Krishna's servant and I am meant to please him. I am his. I don't exist. I have no separate existence other than him. When I define who I am, of course we all have the feeling of existence, that I exist. Raise your hand if you don't feel you exist. Of course, one can't. If one didn't feel one exists, one couldn't raise his hand, because one wouldn't know whose hand to raise. But even if that feeling of I exist and here I am, and usually that feeling of I exist is superimposed on the body, thinking I exist and this is me. But that understanding of I am my body, I exist, and this is who I am, is incorrect. Because if I am my body, and I had the feeling I exist as a body when I was 3 years old, and a three-year-old does have that, even though he cannot speak on a conceptual level, and the same I exists as a 10-year-old, and the same I exists as a 32-year-old, that if I am my body, which body am I? Am I the 32-year-old body, or the 10-year-old body, or the 6-year-old body, or the 4-year-old body? Or the 3-month-old body? So that conception of I am my body is incorrect. And the more advanced conception of I am consciousness is not actually correct either. And the still more correct understanding that I am a soul, I'm eternal, and my symptom is consciousness is correct. The impersonalists think I am consciousness. That's who they identify with, being consciousness. The understanding that I am a soul, or rather I am an eternal being, and the symptom of my eternality is my consciousness. My individuality is my consciousness. That's a more Vaishnava understanding. But to understand ourselves as eternal, as Brahman, it is not incorrect, because it exists in all phases of time. That I am my body, I am this 63-year-old body, only exists in the present. But it did not exist, it was not correct in the past, and it will not be correct in the future. But the fact that I'm eternal soul is correct with the symptom of consciousness in the present, the past, and the future. It is correct, but it is incomplete, because it doesn't acknowledge who I am actually. Because not only am I eternal, I am eternally Krishna's servant. I'm eternally Krishna's servant. This, in essence, This, in essence, to understand this is the object of self-realization, to realize who I am, Krishna's. And when one understands I'm Krishna's, when one does one's work for the pleasure of one's master, it is completely natural. And when we turn our back, either through ignorance and misidentification with the body, or incomplete knowledge and think I'm just eternal, I'm one, the goal is to become one, it is completely unnatural. It is unnatural. But to serve Krishna, one's eternal master, is completely natural. And if we turn our back on serving Krishna, we end up serving so many others anyway. Because service is the constitutional position of the soul, and it's when it's naturally applied with great devotion, that's our relationship with Krishna. That's completely natural. Natural means it is unavoidable. It is natural for us to breathe. It is natural for sugar to be sweet. It's naturally for the wheel of those who have bicycles and cars to be round. It is just natural. There's no meaning to square wheels or salty sugar. There's no meaning to souls who don't serve. It's constitutionally us. So when we take that constitutional position of service and consciously serve Krishna, our eternal master, we are eternal, and we consciously serve our eternal master, that is our natural position. And when one is in one's natural position, one can breathe easily and satisfied. Because when one serves Krishna, one is in touch with one's relationship with Krishna. And that means that Krishna is reciprocating with us and sheltering us and giving mercy to us. And giving the friendship, the affection that we long for, the shelter and the affection that we long for. And everyone in this world is so much lacking those things. In illusion, we try to get our shelter in things that can't give us shelter. So, out of the paths, out of the three paths, the path of karma means the path of gradual progression towards bhakti. And the path of jnana ultimately means the practical progression towards the full surrender to Krishna. From ignorance in fruitive work, to jnana, which is incomplete knowledge, to the complete knowledge that I'm Krishna's, which allows one to surrender, to have a relationship with Krishna, and thereby attain access to Krishna's mercy and friendship and shelter. So the purport continues. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu, we read this part, I'll read it again, has to be performed. Otherwise that work binds one to the material world. Therefore, O son of Kunti, perform your prescribed duties for his satisfaction. And in that way you will always remain unattached and free from bondage. Unattached because I'm acting for his pleasure. I do my best acting for his pleasure. And there my responsibility ends. And what the results are, that is up to him. But when the fruit of the work is meant for me, if that's my consciousness, if I'm attached to the fruit of the work, then I'm always in anxiety. Because I cannot control the fruit, what the fruit will be, how much or if it will come. I'm always in anxiety. And if I'm detached from the fruit and attached to one's work, just to the work itself, dutifully, this is a higher stage described in the fifth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and no anxiety. And Prabhupada explained this for devotees. I mentioned this recently in one of the classes that in Mayapur in 1976, in a class, he said, when you're asking someone for a donation and they don't give, do not be angry, do not be upset. This means that Krishna has not given them permission to give, because he's the anumanta, the sanctioner. Our duty ends, our duty is to distribute Krishna consciousness, that's our duty in some form or another, but the results, that is up to Krishna. And then we are free from bondage. It's the attachment to the fruit of one's work that binds one to the tree of this material world. The purport continues. In the process of jnana, one seeks impersonal liberation by merging into the glaring effulgence of the personality of Godhead. Such liberation is considered hellish by the devotees, because by merging, one loses awareness of the supreme blissful feature of the Lord as Bhagavan. Now, why would a person wish to remove his individuality and become one with the Supreme? And this is not a rare thing at all. In the New Age people, this is what they think the goal is. The most religious persons think this is the goal, to become one with God. In the Advaita, path of Advaita Vad, of the path of Shankara, the people take this as the goal, to lose one's individuality and become one with God. And when we are in great pain, I'm answering the question, this is such a, the thought of it, of losing one's pain, becoming free from pain, even if it means losing one's existence, is relishable, because one can't tolerate the pain of life anymore. So this is basically the position of most religionists and spiritualists. They understand something about the fact that material existence means pain, and they don't want material existence anymore. They can't tolerate the pain anymore. And what pushes them into a spiritual path is to remove the pain. But devotees, so who is the center of that motivation? If I'm on a spiritual path just to remove the pain, my pain, who is the center my motivating force?
Oneself.
Oneself, yes. But a devotee is one who is not interested in his own satisfaction, but he's interested in pleasing Krishna, because he's a devotee. He accepts my position. I'm eternally Krishna's. Eternally Krishna's. And Krishna is eternally mine. He's eternally my shelter. And that mood, that consciousness, is the beginning of Krishna consciousness, in the sense of Krishna consciousness, meaning love for Krishna. This is where it begins. Krishna, I am yours. Mame kam sananam braja. I surrender to you only. And however you want to treat me, I accept that is just what I need. Now, the point when a devotee's duty and his natural inclination, or practically again the definition of a devotee, is to surrender himself to Krishna, whatever you want, that is very wonderful and it is very appealing. But how about the part, the corollary part of that, that whatever you give me, I accept as mine, as my lot in life, and as your mercy, and as my medicine. Now, how does that feel? I just want to please you and act in that way. And whatever happens to me, let it happen. I accept that as your mercy. How does part two feel? A bit frightening? The story, we know that story about that Narada Muni asked, the great sage Narada Muni asked Krishna, not story, but pastime, who are the best devotees? And his reply was, the Braja Gopis. So he said, why are they the best devotees? So he gave them a learning assignment. He gave Narada Muni a learning assignment. And he said, you go to my devotees, some different classes of my devotees, groups of my devotees, and tell them that I have a headache. And that the only cure for my headache is what? The dust from my devotee's feet. You are my devotee. So the dust of your feet will cure our Lord Krishna's headache. So we know what happened, that Narada Muni went to the Brahmins and he told them, I've just been with Lord Krishna. You've been with Krishna. How is our Lord doing? we are doing so many things all day for his pleasure. How is he? What are his pastimes? And Narada's reply is, oh, he has a headache. Oh no, this is terrible. Is there anything we can do to help? Yes. The dust of your feet will cure his headache. How is it possible for me, a devotee of the Lord, to apply the dust for my feet? I take the dust of his feet. How can I take the dust from my feet and apply it to the Lord's head and cure it? Not possible, not possible. I'll go to hell for that. It completely goes against the grain of devotion. And then Narada Muni went to another group of devotees and the same. He told them the same thing and they were devotees. And then finally, and the same result, I'll go to hell for this. This will be terrible. And then finally, when he went to the gopis, they said immediately, yes, take the dust of our feet. Take the dust of our feet, apply it to the Lord's head and cure his headache. And Narada said, aren't you afraid of going to hell for this? Let us go to hell. Let us suffer for thousands of births. Let us burn, etc., or whatever. But if it will save Krishna, our Lord, this trouble, this slight, this pain, we are easily willing to do that. So we think, wow, the gopis are so wonderful. But then we think of what the temperature is in hell, and that there's no prasadam, and there's no food on time, and this problem and that problem, and bad company, and all that suffering, and all the personal suffering that's there. When it comes to how glorious the gopis are, oh, glorious to the gopis. And then when it comes, oh, this is what it means to be the greatest devotee, and that I have to do this, that I'm supposed to really suffer on behalf of Krishna. And of course, it's not the International Society for Suffering for Krishna. That's not the purpose of it. But love means taking the center from me and what's good for me and what's my pleasure, and it's not that Krishna wants anyone to suffer, but love means the personal consideration. What's good for me doesn't enter into the equation. What I want doesn't enter into the equation when there's love, because what I want is to please my beloved. That is love. And to please Krishna means me doing something that I don't naturally, personally have an inclination for. That doesn't enter into the question even. It's not that I should I do it or shouldn't I do it. Well, I'll do it because it will be pleasing to Krishna, even though there'll be this problem and this problem. No, it doesn't even come up. when there is actual prema bhakti. This is why the Braja Gopikas and the other residents of Vrindavan have completely captured the consciousness of Krishna. They have captured his consciousness. Excuse me, he has captured their consciousness by his supremely attractive feature. But not only that, by the quality, by the completeness and the depth of their devotion, their love for him, they have completely captured the consciousness, and they completely control the consciousness of he who is completely independent and all-powerful and beyond anyone's control. They say, the senior gopis say to him, Krishna, if you dance, we'll give you a sweet. Now, all day long in so many temples, everyone is offering Krishna sweets. He doesn't need sweets. But the nature of their love for him makes him dance as they clap his hand. Krishna dances. Krishna dances as they clap their hands. They cause him to dance by not obviously the sweets, but the sweetness of their loving mood and wanting him to act like an ordinary child. The nature of their love, it's shuddha vatsalya prema. It's pure motherly love. And it is so intense. It is so intense that he who is feared by death itself cries with tears running down his eyes when Mother Yashoda threatens him, if you've stolen butter, this is so bad, I'm going to punish you, I'm going to tie you up. And Krishna amazingly cries, not to imitate the way that ordinary boys are afraid of their mother, but because he's so controlled, his consciousness is controlled by her consciousness, the love that's emanating from her consciousness, that he's afraid. One of Srila Prabhupada's god brothers told me that, oh, you people want love. You want to be in Goloka Vrindavan, you want to be like that, but you don't even know what love is, what to speak of, know what that kind of love is. And he said, once I saw a 60-year-old man, his mother was sitting next to him, and she was picking up food, and he would open his mouth, and she would feed him like that. And for Westerners, you say, why is that? But what does it mean? It means her motherly love and wishing to treat him like a little boy, as mothers always see their children as little boys, no matter how old they are. But her intensity of love had captured his consciousness and compressed it into a six-year-old boy's consciousness. And he was surrendered to her love in that way. Not that we're recommending this for anyone. But this is love. That it's so powerful that it controls the consciousness of the all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's why the month of Kartik is so dear to the devotees. It's dear to Srimati Radharani. It's her month. She's the presiding deity of the month of Kartik, and therefore she is known as Kartiki. Because their bhakti in the Damodar month, it is also called Damodar, because there we see how bhakti overpowers. Bhakti comes from the bhakta, and it overpowers the all-powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in the process of jnana, one seeks impersonal liberation by merging into the glaring effulgence of the personality of Godhead, because the pain of material existence is so great. You just want to end the pain. You can't think of any other goal except getting out of the pain, and that's such a self-centered concept, but yet the pain is very real. And sometimes we take to our devotional service, we out of just, let me get free from the miseries of material existence. This is not the highest level of devotional service in any way. But such liberation is considered hellish by the devotees, because by merging, one loses all awareness of the supreme blissful feature of the Lord as Bhagawan, the Supreme Person. The performers of karma or regulated work see the three aspects of human progress other than liberation, seek the three aspects of human progress other than liberation, namely religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification. The fruit of workers think that by exhausting each of their innumerable material desires, they will gradually come out of the dark tunnel of material existence into the clear light of spiritual liberation. This process is very dangerous and uncertain, because sometimes devotees think like this: oh, I have to be honest, I have material desires, so I have to act on those material desires. Why should I be dishonest? It is honestly, it's honest, but it's not maybe intelligent. Because the nature of material desires, what does Krishna say in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the nature of kama, material desires, what does he compare it to? Huh? A fire, yeah. So that's like saying that if my desires are burning in me, and the only way to extinguish my material desires is to pour petrol on them. And there's actually, it's mentioned in somewhere in the Bhagavatam, there is a process that we don't follow though, for this. Is like if you take so much petrol and you put it on the fires of your material desires, you engage in so much sense enjoyment that you're so almost dead and miserable from trying to enjoy that you don't want to have anything to do with it anymore. There is a process like that. It's not a recommended process, because one spark and boom. So that is not the process. The process, what is the process that, the devotional process? Param drisva navartate. To taste the sweetness, so deeply become enamored and entrapped by the sweetness of our relationship with Krishna, the sweetness, the depth of shelter and sweetness and mercy we get from Krishna's holy names, from the deities, from Sisi Gonatai, from Sisi Radhavallava, Jagannath Baladev, Rajadevi, to taste so much sweetness that in comparison to that sweetness, everything is simply bitter or dry. I don't want it. I want that sweetness. That is the process, the ultimate process. Visya vinivartante param visvanivartante. And sometimes when we take to the process, we get something in the beginning. And oh yes, in somewhat, we could say, romantic or sentimental way, yes, I want to be a devotee, I'm ready to give up everything. But and then there's something happens that I call the backward glance. You don't move forward quite at the speed that you were hoping to, and then you start looking backwards at where you've been. Yes, if only I could taste that again, and if only that was really nice, and we begin to romanticize about material things that brought us no happiness, and they brought us so much misery, and that's why we were running from them in the beginning. But yet we have to advance Tushti pushti chudapaya anugasan. We have to get nourishment. We have this is what it means to be a devotee, and we should know that it's our duty to keep on advancing. And it is somewhat dangerous when our advancement stops, and we just, because then we're out of duty, and then we're going on because we've been doing it for so many years, maybe, or because other people will talk badly about us if we don't do this. But we don't get, but then it's like, yes, and then it's just a matter of time before we turn around and look backwards and think, oh, try to relish the taste of that which we rejected already. So it is important that we advance. That means it's important that we spend sufficient time in the prime means of advancement, which means the chanting and the hearing, etc., worshipping the deities, being in front of Sisi Kone Tairada Balava, in the association of devotees. It's important to spend time with the devotees and not only just time, but time in loving exchanges with devotees, as explained in which shastra? Upadas Amrita. That revealing one's mind in confidence, giving gifts, accepting gifts, hearing other devotees. And what are the other two? Asking questions. And what is the other two? I missed two. That's giving and taking, isn't it?
Yeah.
And also, is that six or is that four?
Six.
Say the six. The dati pratigranati. Go ahead. Guyam akyati prasati bunte. Yeah, prasadam. Giving and taking prasadam. Two. Yes, six. Sadvidam. This is the loving exchanges. So associating with devotees in an affectionate way, not just associating with devotees and talking about other devotees in negative ways, or whatever the tendencies tend to be. But in sweet exchanges, and worshipping the deities with one's consciousness, coming before with faith. Sri Mutaya Shradhana, with faith, understanding that the Lords have come here and they can give us everything, and that this is their temple. And the service I do, whether it's offering some pears or some giving some donations or sweeping the floor or the pujari work or offering prayers, is for their pleasure. Let me do this for you, because I am yours. And knowing that they're mercifully and friendly disposed towards, that's the faith. Knowing that they can, that it is sufficient. If we go to them with loving devotion and give ourselves to them, it's sufficient to solve all the difficulties of life and bring us further advancement as well. And reading Srimad Bhagavatam, studying Srimad Bhagavatam, hearing the instructions of this great, great book in the association of devotees, and taking them and trying to apply them to our life. Puranarko dunoditaha, what does that mean? Puranarko dunoditaha. Arko means? Puran, complete sun has arisen in the to eradicate the darkness of Kali Yuga. This is book, the Srimad Bhagavatam. Raise your hand if you have a set of Srimad Bhagavatams in your home. Oh, very good. I won't ask the other half of that question. But to have the book in your home, the set of books in your home, is so wonderful. It brings such auspiciousness. And when we read it in a deep and prayerful way and get the instructions, we're so fortunate. And to chant the holy names, being in the presence of Krishna, and chant offenselessly.
is so fortunate, because in one sense the devotees, the deities are so merciful, but then what happens at some point of the day or night? The doors close, and then the devotee's heart goes, oh, I cannot look at their wonderful form anymore. And the temple is so wonderful, but the temple doors also close. But the door to our access to the holy names of Krishna never closes. The door is always open as long as we have a mouth and an ear and a pair of kartals. We can always chant, or even without kartals, can chant Krishna's names and associate with devotees. So those items of Panchanga Bhakti and live in a holy place. It is dangerous to live in an unholy place. It is much better to live in a holy place. And it is so important to keep moving forward in our devotional life. Who is it important for? Everyone, especially all of us, even you. You have to move forward in your devotional life. And that's such a nice thing to think about. How can I advance? How can I take a step closer to Krishna? Even if it's just one step, what can I do to please Krishna more? Just one step. It may not be a huge step or 100 steps, but if we keep on taking steps to Krishna, then it's like putting pennies in the bank. One day we'll be a millionaire or a billionaire or whatever. And because Krishna will, and this is the miracle of bhakti, that Krishna is unlimitedly far away if we try to attain him by our own power, by the power of karma or jnana. But if he decides to come to us or bring us to him, then that distance is immediately finished. The great distance is gone. So how to evoke Krishna's mercy in such a way that his Kripa Shakti becomes evoked, his mercy becomes evoked, and he's pleased with us. This is the meditation of a devotee. How can I act in such a way that Krishna will be pleased? And when it's taken to the highest extreme, that's the consciousness of the Brajavasis, of the gopis, that there's no consideration of anything other than what will be pleasing to Krishna. What consciousness is that? Therefore, it's the most glorious consciousness. Because in this world, if there's someone like Mother Teresa, she's such a good example, a contemporary example of that, comes to my mind. She is glorified by everyone. Everyone says such nice things about her because she worked for others. Now, we could say something on the somewhat critical side, that it was on the material platform, it wasn't on the spiritual platform. But when someone works for the benefit of others in a selfless way, selfless meaning not that self doesn't exist, but it's in an unselfish way, everyone, that is considered more glorious than someone who has achieved so much on the material level. Everyone will give respect to someone who is working selflessly for the benefit of others. Is that true or not? Everyone has to respect such a person. You may agree a little bit with this part or disagree with that part, a little bit different stuff, but you have to respect such a person. What to speak of someone who is selflessly, the highest perfection of that is selflessly just serving Krishna and in that way serving all living entities. That person is the person who is most worthy of respect in this world, and therefore the Braja Gopikas and the other residents of Vrindavan are the most respected because their relationship with Krishna is so deep. So deep that we spoke about it. There's nothing else for them except Krishna's pleasure. So we hold them up as the ideal, and we saw this in Srila Prabhupada. that he was such so much in that mood of whatever it takes to please Krishna, I will do it. Whatever it takes to please my guru, my Prabhupada sat there. And because you can imagine, he was in 1976, the last time he visited Melbourne. How old was he at that time? 80 years old. Now, at 80 years old, it's not that you want to be traveling all over the world and giving classes all the time. I mean, there's a part of you that would certainly like to just be peaceful and have a comfortable chair and whatever. But Prabhupada just kept on going to the last minute. You can see videos of him on the bed when he's no more than bones and translating Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, 13th chapter of the Bhagavatam. And he's, what a spirit to act in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. Incredible. Just the mood of the gopis, actually speaking. He didn't speak all the time about the gopis, but that was his mood. He emulated anything for Krishna, anything. And his guru Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the same mood. Anything for Krishna. Everything for Krishna. Anything for Krishna's pleasure. The mood of Arjuna. Such surrender Krishna demanded of Arjuna. I bring my chariot in the midst of the armies. See who I must fight. And he had to fight. Who did he have to fight? His relatives, his teacher, Bhishma Dev, his grandfather. Oh, look what Krishna asked him to do. So we can see that the sentiment on a material level of devotion is nice. Sometimes it's all we have. But it's necessary perhaps, but it is insufficient. It is not sufficient. We have to become very deep. Not have to in the sense that we don't have any choice. Like we have to breathe and we have to eat. We don't have a choice. But we do have a choice. Whether we want to turn towards Krishna or away from Krishna. So we choose. We have to choose to take steps forward. Understand the goal is so wonderful. It is so glorious. It is most respected. And that Krishna reciprocates so completely with those who serve him in this way, in this mood, because he's a person. He reciprocates so completely, he becomes captured by them. He dances to their clappings. He remains in the Naparyaham, he tells the brother Gopikas. I am forever in your debt. I can't even repay you. This is wonderful. And the more we read Krishna book, read the Bhagavatam, associate with devotees, visit the holy places, worship the wonderful, the merciful forms, the deities, the more that taste develops within us. So let our attraction to Krishna just grow. We can't imitate and say, I'm here. And on the whim of, wouldn't it be nice to be over here? If we do that, then. But we should advance. Or if we have the capacity, we should take a great step. The great step of, okay, I don't want this material world. I may have this desire, but I don't want it. I want to go forward. And we should move forward. Move forward. Let me finish the purport. The process, meaning of karma, is very dangerous and uncertain because not only is there virtually no limit to material desires,
burns like fire. But even a slight flaw in the process of regulated work constitutes sin and throws one off the path of progressive life. The devotees directly aim for love of Godhead, and therefore, and are therefore most pleasing to the Supreme Lord. Because love of Godhead means, bhakti means, acting to please Him. So therefore, that's most pleasing to Him, because you want to please Him. In any case, all three divisions of Vedic elevation depend completely on the mercy of Lord Krishna. This fact has been proven by Srila Jiva Goswami. It's mentioned by Srila Prabhupada so many times in the Bhagavatam that neither karma nor jnana nor yoga can bring any results without at least some bhakti. There must be some bhakti in there. So all three divisions of Vedic elevation depend completely on the mercy of Lord Krishna. One cannot progress along any one of these paths without the blessings of the Lord. Other Vedic processes such as austerity, charity, and so forth are included within the three primary divisions described here. Okay, thank you very much. Oh, already late. Just ask if there's anyone, one person, one question. If there's anyone has a question, and I'll try to. Well, maybe not. Oh, actually, there's a whole program today. We shouldn't. What time does the wedding begin?
11 o'clock.
So we'll end now then. So you can all take prasadam and go about your days. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Sisi Radha Ballabha, Sisi Gaurachai, Jagannath Baladev, Subhadra Devi ki jai. Sisi Jagannath Baladev, Subhadra Devi, Sisi Radha Ballabha, Sisi Gaurachai, Bhaktivinoda ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.